Dear listeners and dear friends, we are going to proceed today in our series talk on spiritual science about inner development and meditation. There will, of course, be a short sketch about a subject that is also used often in a very blurred sense. Everything can be meditation today. There are people who know to use meditation for when they wash dishes or when they shrub the floor. Some people find it possible to talk about a meditation way in these things. I'm not saying absolutely wrong, but that's not what we're going to talk today. So it's what we're going to talk today is what you could say is Christian in a deep sense and spiritual scientific in a deep sense. So first, I want to talk a little bit about inner development of the human being. For that, we need to understand basic, what is the human being consist of? There are seven parts in the human being. We have an illustration here. Look at the German unfold. This is the structure of the human being. A lower part, fourfold, with something which we can call physical body. Everyone knows, more or less, etheric body, astral body, and ego. This is the fourfold structure of the human being, God-given, because nobody can claim that he was designing and making his four bodies. And then they were God-given. Then we have the three higher parts there in the triangle. They are called manas, buddhi, and atma. Or in English, spirit self, spirit life, and spirit man. This is a subject or a schematic picture of the human being as used in the school of Pythagoras in Greece. So this is the basis. We all consist, if you like, of this dual nature, the higher three parts, spirit self, I repeat, life spirit and spirit man. And the lower part, consisting of ego, astral body, etheric body, and physical body. They were both God-given, but there was a certain time in evolution when the higher part entered the sphere of the lower part. That is an important decision in the whole evolution of man and the world. Then you can imagine that higher part, divine part, if you like, in all of us, started working on the fourfold nature, physical, etheric, astral bodies, and ego. A dramatic process began, which is not at all finished, and it is actually the human being's task, our task, to finish their development, which is possible by having these seven bodies, this seven part being interacting the higher and the lower nature. This is not God-giving anymore. How this is going to work? We have in fact the freedom to ignore our higher parts and just live our astral, our egotistic intentions and ignore that. We are not forced. In other words, we are not forced to complete our possible development. And we're speaking about development. So it is a free act of the human being to do this. Now, both parts, I said, are God-given, but when they come and interact, and you can say, it was like at a certain point in evolution, actually in the old Lemurian time, the higher Trinity was immersed into the fourfold lower bodies. And it is like if you take some sponge. This is like being a sponge. Into this sponge, the higher Trinity was coming in. The result was that the sea of the higher Trinity was individualized in every human being, individualized, like water is individualized in the minute that it is sucked up by a sponge. And then the traumatic process begins, called human development. And I want to give you now a picture, very ancient philosophy of Taoism was aware of the huge potential of development in every human being. I give you a short quote. In a lecture by Steiner in 1905, we find this. The Tao gives expression to the highest to which a large part of humanity can look up and has revered for thousands of years. It is something which was considered as a distant goal of the world and of humanity, the highest element which man carried as a germ within himself, which would one day develop into a fully opened blossom from the innermost depth of human nature. Tao signifies both a deeply hidden basis of the soul and at the same time an exalted future. It must clearly be seen that this development in which I am involved has a goal, that I am going to work towards an exalted goal, and that within me there lives a power which spurs me on to come to the great goal of Tao, as it was named. So that is a large picture of the possible evolution of every human being, to see, to feel the reality of this distant goal and to decide to work in such a way in his life that he will approach this. So we have to dismiss all notions of the human being being finished or being unalterable, as you often hear in popular philosophy, even in so-called scientific, people believe the human being was always the same. There is no greater nonsense from the point of view of universal development. That's not true. And we should not be fixed on that. So we should have the highest notion of development, and we should have the humility, so to speak, of knowing that we are just somewhere on the way to that high goal. And maybe you can already see now when we talk in this sense about development, it is a far goal, far going beyond all little notions of individual, egotistical success. Part of this goal is to get beyond egotism, of course, by experiencing and noticing it. So, having said this, we can turn now to the question, what is the meaning of meditation in relation to such a huge goal, which you only also find in the Christian religion? I'm not talking about confessions and sectarian things, but the big Christian religion has a key meditation, we could say, but also a key prayer, because prayer and meditation have something in common. And I refer now to the Christian Urgebet, most ancient prayer that you find, that most people know, even if we don't understand easily. And this is the Lord's Prayer. And this picture here is actually showing all the seven components in the Lord's Prayer. And this is the most universal prayer. And if you meditate about it, you could also call it the most universal meditation, which is going far beyond all our little fears and little interests. For example, if you take this prayer and you imagine two people who ask for higher assistance and help, and the one prayers, dear God or Godhead, give me rain. And the neighbor says, Godhead, I need sunshine. You can immediately see that we would bring the higher being or the higher beings into an impossible situation because they can't fulfill both wishes. That shows that when we turn to this prayer or to this meditation, we go far beyond all our little egotistical, even group egotistical interests, like it would be a group egotistical interest if the British Army wants the lordship to help winning the battles against the Germans. So that gives the key for what we can understand by meditation. Namely, the aim of it, and I'm characterizing how we can reach that aim to a certain degree, is to attain to a harmony with the divine currents flowing through the world. If you take this, it is getting clear maybe that for some people this is nothing. There are no divine currents flowing through the world. And it is important that one has an understanding or finds an understanding that yes, there are divine currents far beyond our egos, our individualities, our persons, divine currents flowing through the world. Far more important than, say, the electromagnetic currents flowing around through the world. They do. Or the 5G currents. That's all there. But much higher or deeper are the divine currents, which are at the origin of all these other currents, which are not absolute powerful, whereas the divine currents we can only consider as being the real power source, even if this source does not manifest itself immediately, which is a fact. So we have to get a concept that there are higher, and we can call them divine currents, flowing through the world. And that's our aim for meditation, that we 1 minute, a couple of minutes per day, at least try to put our soul into contact with these divine currents. Because with the other currents, not divine, I named electromagnetic, electric currents, climate currents, etc., etc., we come into contact anyway, whether we want or not. But to come into contact, which is the aim of what we can call meditation, with these divine higher currents flowing through the world, is something which we must want, we must strive to. It doesn't happen like that. That's the difference. With all the other currents, you could also say currents of emotions, currents of astral elements, even currents of trying to manipulate people. There are currents in that sense also. They are around us or going through us when we are susceptible for it, whether we want or not. In that sense, to attain a harmony with the divine currents flowing through the world is our own inmost free decision. By the way, just as an illustration, there was a great pupil of Steiner's, a mathematician. I think we have mentioned him in the talk of nutrition. Not Ehrenfried Pfeiffer, that was mentioned, but George Adams, a very ingenious student of anthroposophy. He was also a very special, gifted translator of Steiner's lectures in England. And to him, Steiner once said, "Don't forget, meditation is the only free deed or act that you can perform to begin with." Of course, there are other free acts, but they should all be based on the free act of meditating. That's why it is such a central subject we approach today. And it has to do with the deep, free evolution, development of us after all the higher beings have educated us, so to speak. We end at the portal of self-education. And at the center of this portal, we can say, for modern man, is the act of meditation. And I repeat, because it's so basic, I repeat, what is this act consisting of? What does it aim at? It is aiming at attaining the harmony, to harmony, with the divine currents flowing through the world. The not divine or the devilish currents I've mentioned before, they are all around and try to manipulate us all day long, anyway, without us wanting that. So that is an exceptional important aim of true meditation. Of course, there are people who think meditating is just a higher form of pleasure. I'm not saying that it cannot cause great joy, but not narrow personal pleasure as we have when we drink our beer or gamble somewhere, but it is far, far bigger. And now, there are these currents flowing through the world. Even maybe especially today, when we have the can have the feeling, the world is only filled with elements of evil nature. One can understand if some people think that is the truth, but it is certainly not the biggest truth. The divine currents, which model in the end everything, which model also all the untruth that is flowing around, then they are far more important, and we should not lose consciousness of their existence. For example, a great American, I have quoted already in earlier talks, for me, one of the greatest was Ralph Waldo Emerson. And he was convinced of the fact that there is a spiritual law of gravity. Gravity. He was convinced that every natural law had a spiritual counterpart. And he used as an example the natural law of gravity, which is known to all of us. How can we enact this law? Very simple. Actually, we don't have to do much. We just have to take something and let it go. And what happens? You don't even see it anymore. It goes automatically towards the center of the earth. Without our activity. And in the spiritual world, in which we also move with that higher part of us, if we don't totally forget it, that it exists, in the world we move with this part of us, there is another law which is correspondent to the law of gravity. And Emerson says, in this sphere, everything at the end gravitates to truth. And the difference is this gravitation in the spiritual cosmos, so to speak, doesn't realize itself by itself. There we, human beings and activity, truth searcher activities are necessary. That is a very important aspect. Why it is important to lead untruth, lies which the world is full of, to truth. That's performing the spiritual law of spiritual gravitation. I wanted you to bring that in because it can help us to understand that it is much more complex, that there are spiritual, we could call it divine currents. In the divine currents, we find things floating towards truth. But that is not an automatic process. We have to help this. And one means is to go into meditation. Now, that is broadly saying what the aim is, to unite not with the evil, not with the filth stream, but with the divine stream also circling around our globe. Now, as I said before, of course, then we have to convince ourselves there are these streams as well. But we are not automatically taken into their fold, so to speak, but this is connected to our free striving. Now, this was more now a general idea, I hope, to get over for what is the aim of real meditation. And then we have the question, we now go a little bit into it, how to perform an act of meditation. Where do we start? And I think the natural start for every modern person, who whether he is a scientist or not, is trained in a kind of a scientific way of looking at the world. Intellect. We need intellect. But intellect alone doesn't get at us into what we now call meditation. And I want to illustrate that. Intellect has to do with what has to do in order to understand what is already there. It's not a tool to understand the becoming reality in the same way. And for getting sensitive for the becoming living reality, we need something going beyond intellect. That can be a real obstacle for people to meditate, because we are used to use intellect in whatever direction we direct our attention. And it's very understandable, and it is also good in a way. We want to understand by intellect, if it is a sound intellect, that's fine. But by that, if we want to make a meditation, we usually use some formula, and I will give you an example afterwards, some words, symbols. And what are we usually doing? We analyze it, we try to understand. And that's an obstacle, because the intellect is bound to this part of us, the ego. And the intellect is a wonderful tool, but it's restricted. So we have to learn not to send thinking, the word for intellect now, away, say, for weeks or months. That would be disastrous. We wouldn't even be able to go shopping or to board a train. We need it, but we need to have the freedom also to stop it if we wish. And that's what we have to do when meditating. Maybe I have to get a bit more precise. The prerequisition for meditation is called concentration. If we can't concentrate, we can't meditate. And that's already a problem today, because we are trained and we are treated by the other world streams that go around the globe, electromagnetic. We have talked about in the nutrition talk, a lot of electromagnetic influence have the effect that people don't understand anymore. That means they can't even make use of their normal, healthy intellect. So how can you concentrate if your intellect is, you know, going in all directions at the same time? So concentration is a big task and a big problem today. You see it also with children, how they're distracted, how they are fascinating by being drawn into all sorts of things. So you have concentration, which is a task today. It can start by, say, reading an interesting book. Some people can do that even in the train, in full noise. If they're concentrated enough, they don't even hear the noise in the external world. That's something we have to cultivate. And if we do, then we can start doing the meditative process based, for example, on some sentence given by individuals who are a bit more advanced than the usual crowd, so to speak, initiates, great leaders of humanity, something like the Lord's Prayer comes from a very high source. It is the prayer given by the Christ. So if you take thoughts of such a high origin, then that's the best place for cultivating meditation. Now I give you a little, very simple example. A sentence you can find in spiritual science literature, which would in English be called "Wisdom is in the light," or "In light is wisdom." So you could take this sentence, concentrate a little bit, and then in the next stage, you don't think about it all the time in order to find out the deep meaning that might be hidden in it. The intellect also always wants to go on to find out more and more and more. And then the quality of concentration is again lost because you go into, I don't know how many thoughts, but it is rather like what a goose does, or rather a hen, keeping an egg in the warmth so that something can develop there, which is a living being in the end. That's rather what we can compare the meditation process. Protect something, live on it. You might think about it before the meditation or after the meditation, but not during. That would be like if a hen would tear out the egg all the time, put it into, I don't know what, outside world, and by that preventing a natural inner quiet growth. So we have to understand that as much as we need thinking for the understanding even of spiritual realities, Steiner always makes that point, with a sound intellect you can understand the highest reality, but if you can't leave the intellect alone for some short period, you cannot really do what the egg is now doing, because the hen is doing with the egg, because it always rolls away and you're back in your analyzing process. That should be maybe clarified even more deeply than I can do this in a short talk, because this is a problem, and I know by the experience of some people who talk about that, they cannot leave the analyzing intellectual process. And so they cannot do what the hen does with the egg. It rolls away and is nowhere, breaks up before it is ripe to produce a new living being. So, intellect is for understanding those things which have already become, but it doesn't help you to understand the living, which we have to learn to understand. Even to understand more deeper our own living body. This is a life body. And the intellect cannot understand what is life. So you could, of course, now take a sentence like, in the light there is wisdom, and make very ingenious or very silly thoughts about it. But that's not the aim of meditation. So we have to learn to live in a kind of a polarity, to use our intellect in the sharpest, clearest way, and be free of it for the purpose of deepening on one thought in a brooding, meditative process. I hope this is clear, otherwise we can come back in some other occasion maybe. These are the elements: concentration, meditation, as serving the process of self-development, which is aimed to make a better tool of myself for my work among my friends, social surroundings. It's not a tool for self-gratification. It is far beyond and makes me a better servant in the world, so to speak. But then I have to know what contents should I take for meditation. You can also use imaginative contents, like compose the imagination of a cross surrounded by roses. Then you come to the rose cross. Can be a good meditation. You can build it up with your intellect, with your understanding, and then meditate on it when it is there. That's a wonderful tool or a wonderful start for a deepening. Now, we can see from what I try to shortly describe that the condition for meditation today are not very helpful, the life conditions. And we have some surrogate substitutes of meditation, or we say, well, I can't do it alone, so I need a group. So we tend to make group meditations. But if you make a group meditation, is it your individuality who makes a free decision? Or you get into a other social stream, so to speak, by all the other people and floating, getting into harmony with the astral realities of all the other people there? Is that what you want? But I know it's very often done today, but it shows to me a lack of the trust of the individual to do the first step and not go into a group meditation which gets blurred elements, and you may get dependent on those people who lead this group to a guru. We don't need a guru today, basically. The time of gurus and group meditation is, in my view, over.
Is there merit in group meditation?
I don't see it directly. It works, and you can maybe be strengthened, but whose strengths are you going away with? Take, for example, something which goes into this direction is called Familienaufstellung in German. It works. You can even evoke the presence of departed souls. But what of these departed souls you get? It is possible that you get into contact with some astral excrement, to put it maybe not nicely, floating around in the time of after-death development in the Kamaloka. And people believe even that you can find out about reincarnation by this sort of manifestation in group work like that, which I think is highly dangerous, producing group illusions. And there are many people around with group illusions today. I will talk about that briefly on our reincarnation talk, because I have again recently met, for example, I think the third Dian Dunlop in my life. Yes. And they take it very seriously. Delusions on this spiritual field are really extremely easy to come. That's why the intellect should never be given up. It should just be controlled for the purpose of doing something which goes beyond the intellect. But then you have to come back. Otherwise you get without any ground under your feet and float somewhere. And group meditations, I wouldn't recommend. I don't think today that's what we really need. But there are even people who start doubting the worth of the normal intellect, and they believe you cannot understand something unless you are in a group. Scientific groups, scientific community is for some people higher than the individual understanding that we can get. And I think that's not a very healthy development.
We say that group meditation can be a powerful thing if basic standards are met. Everybody has their meditation capability developed.
Mm-hmm.
Before they enter into a group meditation, and then...
Well, if this precondition is met, but who is measuring the standards of the individual members of the group? Can be there, can be illusionary. I would be very careful and a bit skeptical whether this is something we should start with. Whether it's not better we start with clear understanding of spiritual realities, and then the process of going beyond by deepening, as we have tried to say, in meditation. And if many people do this, maybe they can, when they come together, do something, even as a group, which then has a high potential. But the condition for me seems to be that every individual makes this process first by himself, so to speak. In spiritual science, in the beginning time, especially in the time where the Theosophists were still there, Blavatsky, etc., people were seriously speaking of the masters of wisdom and harmony in the soul life. That was an important thing. So there was, of course, also the aspect of, it's not only the individual, there are higher beings who are inspiring a certain way of coming together of individuals. They are called masters of wisdom and of harmony of the soul life. Some of them are known in spiritual science, Christian Rosenkreutz, or the Master Jesus, and some of them are the source of sentences, formulas that can be used for individual meditation, can be used for, at a certain level, even a group consideration.
Spiritual work is not without danger.
You're very right. Yes, you're very right. And I know one drastic saying by Steiner to one of his pupils, spirituality, anthroposophy, concretely, is a very potent, dangerous thing if you don't handle it rightly. There's an example of a pupil of Steiner's who became very naughty, vanity-ridden, and Steiner commented to someone, look, this man would have become a very good professor in a normal university without theosophy or anthroposophy. And it can be that touching spiritual truth, even just understanding them, cannot always have a very good effect.
Because you also need to be able to integrate it.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why in this basic meditation called the Lord's Prayer, the whole human nature is included. The whole. Not only your highest faculties, your intellect, your astral, the whole. And that requires you to integrate, as you say. I do agree. And there are many, even theosophists, and I think even today some anthroposophists, which are lost the way in a way by getting, you know, immensely intelligent and knowing everything, but they don't practice it. That's why to the same lady that Steiner said, anthroposophy is a dangerous thing, she said, it is better you work on one single habit in your habits or in the etheric body. Belong to our whole nature. You work on one habit, to change one habit per year. Then you read 50 lecture cycles at the same time. So, of course, if we have development, we can have high standards. I tried to outline in the beginning universal development of our whole inner being. Or we can have an ideal of developing this or that in us, special faculties, special clairvoyance, special powers. Some people train themselves to become successful businessmen, overpowering your partners. There's nothing bad about being successful, but that's not the highest aim of your meditation life. Maybe as a stimulus for further work, I want to, and how meditation is linked to development of our own being. Then you can go back again to the seven prayers of the Lord's Prayer. And in the lecture that Steiner gives, it's a wonderful lecture in 1907 in Berlin. He says, meditation and prayer, in a way, have the same origin. meditation is more in relation to thought, but in the way that I describe, so that the thought also can step back, whereas the prayer is more feeling, in good sense, but they have the same aim. I give you a short quote of this lecture in 1907. You find it in the complete works of Steiner under the title The Lord's Prayer. We see that the seven petitions of the Lord's Prayer, the fact that the human soul, if its aspirations are pure, prays to the divine will to bring the individual principles of the human being to develop in a way that human beings will find the right way, the right path of life through the universe, and develop all the parts of their being in the right way. The Lord's Prayer is the kind of prayer through which people, in moments of need, should raise themselves to the full meaning of the evolution of their sevenfold human nature. And that could be said for every true meditation. It is a means to unfold our whole being, not only part of it, in a universal sense. That's one thing. Originally, Christian prayer was nothing other than meditation. Only meditation is more thought-oriented, and through it the meditant endeavors by way of the thoughts of the great leaders of humanity to attain to harmony with the divine currents flowing through the world. Very, very basic for me seems to be the point of view that we are getting into contact with the objective spiritual currents that flow through the world around the globe. Without an awareness of that, it's practically impossible or very, very difficult to get into what is called meditation here. I know there are some points that are very difficult, the relation of intellect and meditation, because we, even for starting a meditation, we should use our intellect to understand its structure to a certain degree and then deepen it, let go the intellect for a while, not forever. Of course. Yes, maybe we can sum that up, and I will come back to some of the elements later in another talk. We will have a talk about Ahriman and Michael tomorrow. We can say, to close up the various aspects we have touched upon, I would say meditation can thus become the anchor of the soul life on its journey of unending development, oriented by the polar star of unpersonal universal interests. With that, I would say, close up and sum up in a way some of the things that I try to briefly say. And I hope you can work with some of this thought material to have a better understanding of what is actually meant if we use this word of meditation, which is used in such many ways and also not always selfless, intended. So that's why I wanted to connect with a big Christian meditation prayer, which has the complete human being in its compass, so to speak. And let me maybe finish oneself once more with the same formula. Well, let us repeat the concentration extract, so to speak, of what is involved in a true, worthwhile meditation, which, like in this prayer, the Lord's Prayer, the first thing you say is you appeal to the highest in yourself before you ask for this and that and that. And the highest in yourself is called the Father. That's not your personal Father, that's the highest within you. And all the other seven parts are serving this highest, or they are serving your own lower ego, which is possible. The lower ego, of course, has also a potential to get itself higher. But that is an open process. So in that sense, to sum up some of the core things I try to outline, I would again read that short sentence, or not short sentence. Meditation can become the anchor of the soul life on its journey of or through unending development, oriented by the polar star of unpersonal universal interests. Thank you.